Welcome to the Lizzian Events podcast, and today we must welcome
Angela Barker.
Ange, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you, darling. How are you today?
I am absolutely happy, content, happy, healthy. I'd like to be a little bit more wealthy, but I think the candles are burning and the spells are out there, so I'm out every confidence that magic's going to give me what I need. And how about yourself?
Yeah, same here. You know, I did some candle magic yesterday. I've done my little normal ritual this morning, and things are happening. You know, things are starting to shift along nicely now. I'm not having to struggle or worry where my next reading's coming from again. They're just coming.
Do you think though you had that little bit of a dip because people were uncertain about what they were doing, and now they're seeing a little bit of a chink of a light, and they're thinking, let's get hold of Ange and let's get a bit of direction?
Yeah, I think there's a few reasons why people have started booking us again. I think when this first happened, everybody was in total disarray. Oh my God, how am I going to afford to live? How am I going to afford to pay my bills? What's going to happen? You know, and then things started slotting into place for people. So all of a sudden their finances were okay-ish. For majority of people anyway. And then I kind of think people are now thinking, do you know what, we're going to start to be allowed out a little bit more now, so I need to know what's going to happen in my future, and I need to know what's happening around me, so I want to get a bit of reassurance and a bit of guidance. And then I also think, because you know me, Ian, I will work 7 days a week 351 days a year. You know?
And, yes, you will.
And I think my guides, and I think the universe was sort of saying, do you know what, Angie, you need a bit of a break as well. So we're gonna knock you on the head for a couple of weeks and just make sure you relax and chill out.
I think that if you can do it, you can, if you're not careful, lock into and think, I quite like this. I quite enjoy it. And I think that people should just hold that moment while they're savouring these moments of silence and times where one doesn't have to do anything or is not enforced to work, rather than moan about it. The way I think one should consider it is to say, I'm going to really enjoy and take advantage of this moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think people should be taking advantage of this moment. You know, all the things that they've always wanted to do, you know, learn new things, start doing some research online, want to get onto a college course, start looking at new college courses, want to get a new job, start working out what sort of job they want to do, want to start up their own businesses. Now's the perfect time to get all that stuff put down on paper and start pushing it forward, you know. There's lots of things people could be doing, gardening, baking, tons of things.
Coming back to food again.
Oh yeah, always. It'll always come back to
me. We just love our food. Right, yeah. Ange. According to Wiki, tabula rasa is the theory that individuals are born without built-in mental content. And this roughly equates to the English term blank slate, or more literally a means erased slate. So would we or could we say that we could take this epoch, this change, this moment in time, do you think that we can actually settle our minds down and say, I am in a position where I can have a blank slate and I can reformulate my life to the best of its advantage? Is that possible, Ange?
Yes, would be the quick and easy answer. Of course it's possible. I mean, and what a perfect time to do it when there's so many people not having to focus on work, not having to worry about where the next bills, you know, where the next pay packet's coming, because it's being paid for you, you know. And there are people saving money at the moment, even though they're only on 80% wages, you see. So I think there is a time when you can sort of take that stock and you can take a step back and go, I don't like my job. I don't like who I'm in a relationship with. I don't like where I'm living. I don't like who I am right now. What can I do to change that? And by taking step by step and bit by bit, you'll be able to work out exactly what you want to do and where you want to get to.
So if you're going to do or use magic to do this, let's say we're going to use magic for the blank slate, do we get a large piece of paper that's completely blank and start writing down what we would require? Would that be a good starter?
I think with any magic, the first thing you need to do is cleanse yourself and get rid of any negative energy that's around you. So cleansing and banishing would be the first thing I would do. And then I would say, yes, get the piece of paper, get a pen and start working out exactly what you want to change and what you want to do going forward.
So let's just think for a moment. We've got the blank slate. Where do we start on our ground level? Do we start in the world that we work in, or do we start on our spiritual values? Do we start with the connections? Which do we start, head in the clouds or feet on the ground?
Oh, well, surely by, you could probably start on both in a way, because if you're working on your work life, and you're thinking, do you know what? I don't want to be in that mundane 9-to-5 job or shift work or whatever it is. And I want to follow a more spiritual path. Then you can kind of mix them up a little bit together, couldn't you?
I think you could. I think you
could.
You
know, there's no reason why you couldn't.
There's an old Jewish saying, and it says, if you are thinking about your work in the synagogue, there is no reason why you shouldn't think of the synagogue whilst you are working. And that is quite a good guidance, isn't it? There's no reason why when you are performing your magical ceremonies, you shouldn't be contemplating the work, your day-to-day work. And whilst you are working in your day-to-day mundane to Friday job, there's no reason why you shouldn't now and again just contemplate your little bit of magic that you're working on.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, if you look at me, for example, I worked quite high up in management, where I was managing quite a lot of staff, but I was still running my business alongside it. And I was still doing tarot readings, I was still living in the spiritual realm, and I was going into work and still doing spiritual stuff within my workplace.
Now,
and
that's...
then when I was home, I was still doing work within my spiritual realm. So,
and that's really interesting, because over the years, I've come across many people who wanted to be full-time Reiki masters, full-time tarot readers, full-time healers, full-time mediums, full-time whatever you like within our love of our life, mind, body and spirit, spirit, body and mind, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And very few have realized that the key to this ambition is to blend it with one's day-to-day full-time job. It's the only way to make the transition. And again, this is another indication that one can be working a mundane to Friday and actually beginning to blend that which you love and that which is your ambition into that time space. In fact, we have to make an investment at all times for anything to happen. So in a way, magic dictates that even if you don't believe in magic, a lot of people use it as a method in their lives without that knowledge.
Yeah, definitely do. They definitely do. I mean, some of mine was really open and some of it wasn't. You know, the fact that when for example, when I used to go in and I used to think, right, we've got to a point now where we're going for a bit quiet, so let's have a massive spring clean at springtime. So we'd spring clean the whole thing. And as you know, in bulk, being at springtime, and Brigid, the goddess of in bulk, spring cleaning is all about the cleansing and the clearing of that negative energy, of that busy patch that you just had, getting rid of all that negative and that low energy field, to be able to bring in the positivity and the goodness. So I used to quite often go in and get everybody sort of cleaning, me as well. I used to clean with them, and they were actually really shocked when I used to go out and clean with them, because, you know, the first couple of times I did it, they were like, no manager's ever cleaned with us. But I found it part of that process and part of that magical process to get things cleaned down, cleansed and banished away to the point where we could start afresh again.
How big a step was it for you to go from successful corporate to working for yourself? How big a step was it? Was there a transitional period where you thought, I made the right decision?
Do you know what? It took me a while to get to the actual decision that I needed to jump off that cliff edge, because that's what it felt. That's what it feels like when you're stepping off that being, because when you're growing up, you get told you grow up, you have 2.4 children, you go into work, you create a career, you earn money, you pay your taxes, you build a house, and, you know, you look after your kids, and that's your life. And that's what you get told you should be doing as an adult. So it's scary when you start going, do you know what? I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be that person that's going to get married and have 2.4 children and work for somebody for all my life to be told that, you know, what to do and when to do it. I want to go and do my own thing, and I want to use my spiritual realm and my spiritual self to get there. And it's scary when you're standing on the edge of that cliff edge and you're looking over and you're going, can I actually do this? Because that is a massive question that you have to ask yourself when you're about to jump off of it. And I should have jumped off my cliff edge 4 years ago. I didn't. I jumped off it last July, because before that I was working part-time alongside my business, and I built it up to the point where I could go full-time within my business. But it took me 4 years to act off that cliff edge to make sure we were safe and we were secure. And that's the thing, having that faith that you're going to be secure as well.
There's two points I'd like to make here, and I'd really like your input on it. The first thing is, there was a lecturer who's talking to a group, a visiting lecturer talking to a group of students. And he says, before we start, I'd like to ask you what your ultimate ambition is. Would it be a diver? What would it be? And he went round the students and pointed at one. One said, I want to have my own stables. Another one said, I want to become a diving instructor. Another one said, I want to sail the Caribbean islands. Another one said, interestingly, I want to sail the Greek islands. Another said that she would love to have a family and a beautiful home. And another said that she would love to be able to support and look after her parents. He stopped and looked around and said, so why are you all studying law?
Yeah. And that's a good point, isn't it? Why are you doing stuff that you're not happy, that you're not wanting to do, really? It's just a means to an end for some people. And I think sometimes people really need to look at themselves and go, is this going to make me happy? Because if it's not, you need to go and find what makes you happy. Because I'm telling the listening public right now, I'm happy running my own business. Although I get stresses and strains and worries and anxiety and all that rubbish that you get, I'm happy. And there's not one day goes by that I don't feel a bit of happiness from my business.
And you can tell that with the way that you put your posts on your social media streams and the interactions that you have with the multitude of friends. I mean, you and Claude, you have got so many friends. It's absolutely amazing. You couldn't, I mean, if I said to you now, list them, you couldn't do it because there's so many of them. And that's got to be because you're loved and you're appreciated and you're respected. And they are essential ingredients to success. You can't have success unless you are liked, unless you are determined, unless you have got ethics. I suppose in a way, being liked isn't necessarily always definitely there, but people respect ethic, they respect ethos, they respect ability, and you've got all of those things. And that brings people to you.
Yeah, so, it does, definitely.
So you do have to have, it's no use just thinking, oh, I'm going to do this, unless you look in the mirror of your soul and see who you are and see if you're acceptable. But, you know, I think there's another thing as well, this thing about working for oneself. I think that you have to have no fear, the fear of loss. And I think the less you've got, the bigger the chance, the bigger the possibility that you will succeed. I think if you're hungry, you search for the food. But I think if you do something on a whim, you know, a rich lady wants to become a seamstress, a rich lady wants to become a singer, a rich man wants to become, what should we say, a dealer in cameras or whatever it is. But because they're already wealthy, they haven't got the drive for it, and they don't succeed. So I'll give you this picture. Talk about it for me. Two people come to England, and one's a baker and the other one is involved in coffee. They don't know anything about England at all, so they see a very cheap shop in the middle of a council estate in Nottingham, and they open a bakery and coffee shop. Do you know what happens? It is full of people. I kid you not. It's just absolutely full of people. People, and outside of this coffee shop, you'll see brand new Merc parked outside. You know, it's a council estate. And then you'll see, and I saw one the other day, Ferrari stuffed outside. And they walk across, and they walk in this coffee shop, and they're talking to people off the estate and God knows what else. That's power, isn't it?
Isn't it, Joss? That's amazing power, because that's two people that know nothing about Nottingham, know nothing about the area.
Yes.
They've just decided it's going to be a success, and they know they're good at what they do, so they just do it. And word will spread. And that says a lot, doesn't it? Because word does spread. And then now we've got this mixture of people.
Yeah, and you sit there with your £2 coffee, and it's a great big mug, believe me, crowned coffee, great big mug, milk, hot milk if you want it. That's so fantastic. And people pop in, and you see an expensive car pull up outside, the Range Rover, and girl jumps across the road, jumps in, three big loaves and some of the patisseries and God knows what else, £20 crosses hands, out they go. And it's going on all the time, and you're sitting there drinking your coffee and think, they've got a gold mine here.
Yeah, that's amazing though, isn't it? That's amazing. And that's what people can achieve when they believe in themselves enough to know that they can do it.
So is self-limiting belief involved there? Is it the fact that if you think it's not going to happen, or you start saying, oh, that's not the right house for this, that's not the building for this, this isn't the right factory, this isn't the right car, this isn't the right van, this isn't the right set of tarot cards, what happens then, Ange?
Well, you're instantly putting negative energy on that business, aren't you? You're instantly putting that negative feel and that negative emotion. And every time somebody walks in, they're instantly going to feel that you don't think it's the right place and you don't think it's the right set of tarot cards. So they're instantly going to feel that negativity from you, because your energy will change towards it. I mean, we could kind of talk about Lizzian's crystal stall, really, couldn't we, Ian? Because nobody kind of said that it would work on Victoria Market, did they?
Well,
and now look at it.
Well,
let's
get it right. 15 years ago, there was a guy who came around the corner who is since entered his final sleep, and he looked at us when you could smoke at that time with his cigar stuffed in his mouth, and he was just going to Vito's, the coffee guy, and he looked at Liz and I and said, "You'll never effing make any money selling rocks."
and now there's a lot of people that make money selling rocks.
Well, yeah, and I mean, look at it as a stall. I mean, it's just mad. It's just amazing. And that stall has enabled us to do all sorts of things. I mean, we're fortunate people in lots of ways, as you know. But I don't think we're lucky. I just think that we're just I just think we just use magic. I just think it works all the time for us.
And I think because of your positive energies and your positive outcome and your positive being out there and pushing it and driving it and putting your energies into it, is why it's succeeding.
Well, as well, it's the bank of Lizzian as well, because you'll get somebody come around the corner who's somebody who lives on the street or something, and say, Ian, you couldn't lend us a fiver, could you? And I'll say, yeah, no problem, Carling, have a fiver. And he'll come back absolutely guaranteed the following day or the following week, say, here's £6. I don't want £6, I only want a fiver. And, you know, we've got quite a stream of people who live in the streets and live in very difficult situations who we help out in the end of times. And do you know, we've never been let down? Not a once.
And you won't do, because when you help people, people remember it. No matter how rich or poor or whatever, the poor people tend to remember it more than the rich, to be honest. But, you know, but I think that's because they know that they can always rely on you to help them out.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, when we had the shop up at Canning, there was a guy, John, he's now in his final sleep. He lived on the streets. He was a tough cookie, John was. And one day, we were about 8 o'clock in the morning, and he was looking in the window, and I put my head around the corner. I said, how you doing, John? He said, oh, God. He said, that crystal, said, that's shaped like a dolphin. He said, I absolutely love it. I said, have it. And he said, what? I said, have it, I'll go and get it for you. So I went around and picked it up and gave it to him. And he there was tears in his eyes, I kid you not. And you know what he said, nobody will ever steal from you or your shop, ever. I'm telling you, nobody ever. And I'll tell you something, we never have ever had any problems ever in anywhere we've been in Nottingham with people.
And it's because people know that if they are that desperate, you know, that you will help them out. I mean, look at the time I turned up to your shop, Ian, and I had forgot my purse. My purse was left in the car. And I was going off to do a house cleanse, I think, and I needed the sage to do the house cleanse. And I'd brought a few crystals as well. And you were like, that's all right, just pay us next time you see us.
Yeah.
And it was like, you sure, I can run back down to the car. You were like, no problem, not a problem at all. And then I went to give you the money back and you won't bloody take it.
Oh, that's the way it is. And I think you can be a little bit, it pays you to be a little bit generous in your life, give a bit. I would say that you have to be wary. You mustn't put yourself into financial difficulty or distress. I think a lot of people make that mistake. They think they've got to be seen to be generous, and then they get back home and think, oh God, I wish I hadn't done that. I think you've got to be quite careful about this. But let's come back to Stella with a coffee shop. She's lovely. She's really nice. And you know what else she does? She encourages you to bring your own cartons to put the cake in. So you bring a Tupperware bottle box or something like that to save her the money. So she's absolutely fantastic. Now, we used to have some people who used to live next door to us. They were absolutely brilliant, Jerry and Kat, and they came from Slovakia. And when they came from Slovakia about 6-7 years ago, they couldn't speak a word of English, not a word. And Jerry drove an old Lada, well, the last one I must have ever seen, and it was immaculate. And they turned up and they couldn't speak anything. They kept smiling, and she said, coffee, you want coffee? And I was like, well, don't worry, what a coffee, but you used to have a coffee handed over the hedge. And all of a sudden, the garden was immaculate. They only rented the house next door, but it was immaculate. And he put a shed up and put a roof on it for his bikes. And then the house started to become immaculate. And all the weeds had gone and the hedge was cut. And you really started to get really well with them. And then they'd go away every 6 months, drive back to Slovakia, and he'd come back a month later, 2 weeks later, whatever it was, and he'd knock on the door and he'd say, here you are, and he'd give you a big litre bottle of Slovakian vodka.
Nice.
No questions. Brilliant. Anyway, the months went by and they turned into years, and in the fullness of time, they began to speak pidgin English, and then they became to speak fluent English. They'd come to the country with nothing. Now they speak English. Jerry's got a job driving a truck for a really big haulage company, and he is really doing well. Kat's gone from working on the tills at Aldi to becoming an assistant manageress, and they just keep going. Brand new Volkswagen Passat turns up onto the drive, left-hand drive, of course, because they've obviously got plans to move away. And they have a child, and 7 years later, fluent in English, very, very comfortably off. The house is beautiful. And one day, Jerry said, we're going home. And I said, why? Why? You're just a fantastic person to have living next door. We just love you. We love who you are. We love how kind you are, how industrious you are, what great neighbours. And he said, we own our house in Slovakia now, Ian. We've earned enough. We've bought it. And we've got plenty of money saved up, which we're taking home with us. And we've paid our dues. We've paid our taxes in this country. But we want to go home, and we've got a future for the rest of our lives. 7 years it took them. What a story.
That's amazing. I'm proper smiling, Arian, because I love stories like that, because it just gives you that warm little glow inside, doesn't it? And I feel generally happy for them that they're able to do that.
Yeah.
When I've spoken to people, going back about starting your businesses and pushing yourself forward and stuff, whenever I've spoken to people and I've given them guidance within tarot, and then they've come back to me a year, 2 years, maybe 3 years later, and just sort of said, that guidance you gave me to get on and do things, I'm now doing it, and I can't thank you enough. And that just gives me a little bit of a buzz inside. But I always say to them, I haven't done anything. You've done it. You've pushed yourself in that direction, and you've got yourself in that position. I was just there to give you a little jolt.
It's true. And but would you say that Kat and Jerry, when they came here 7 years ago, couldn't speak a word of English? Do you think that they were in more disadvantage than anybody who's in a lockdown at this moment in time?
Yeah, I would say they were more disadvantaged because they couldn't speak English. And it's really hard to get on in England unless you can speak English, you know? And not just that, they've come into a strange country that they didn't really know. You know, it's like somebody from England moving out to Poland and then trying to set up their life there without knowing anybody, without being able to speak the language. You know, it'd be difficult. So I imagine that just their kindness and their positivity and their gumption is what I'm going to use, because that's what it feels like. It was real gumption that they wanted to push themselves forward and get themselves into that position.
Interestingly, I was talking to Jerry one afternoon, and he told me that he had to save for 2 years to get here.
Wow. But he did it.
He did.
And he got here.
He did it.
And then he went back knowing that his life was sorted for the rest of his life with his wife and his children.
And everything worked for him in a way, because Mr. Cannon, who used to own the house, he, for some reason, just let them move in with 1 month's rent up front. I said to Mr. Cannon, you know, why? He said, I just liked him. I just knew it was right.
Yeah.
And
you know what? He managed to get a house back that was immaculate and well kept, and, you know, probably got back in a better state than what he had actually rented it out as.
He did. So what we're saying then, Ange, is this: limiting yourself by having nothing is one of the reasons you'll never get anything. You have to take a chance. And the less that you've got, the less of a chance that you're actually taking. You know, if you lost £100, in the best way of the world, it's easy. You know, you're able to get £100.
Yeah.
And if you're going to invest £10,000, then you might not do it, because you might think, oh, God, I'm going to lose £10,000. It's an interesting thought. Now, why do people not take advantage of having time on their hands? Why don't they take advantage of it? What makes people stick? What makes people capitulate their life? What makes them waste their life hours, Ange?
I think to some extent, I think people can't get out of their own head. You know, they're in their heads and the head's rolling around and stressing itself and worrying about itself. And sometimes I think if they got out of their heads and just followed their heart, they wouldn't waste their life as much. And I also think some people think, yay, we've got all this time in the world now. You know, I'm getting paid. I don't have to worry about that. Oh, I'll just watch this TV show and then I'll just carry on with life, you know. But then you end up sitting down in front of the TV and not moving all day because you've got into that slob mentality where you're just sitting there and slobbing out, you know. And I think people get stuck. I think people get stuck in their ways of life. It's like soaps. People watch soaps religiously even when they don't enjoy them.
Do you think, though, some people actually go into the soap and it becomes their, if you like, reality?
Yeah. I think people, what I've always said about soaps, because there's never really anything happy in soaps, really. You might get the odd little splurge of happiness, but it never sticks for very long. And I think some people use soaps as a way to escape their own lives. Because in soap lands, there is always misery. There is always bad things happening. And it's not your life. So your life don't actually look that bad compared to soap lands.
Interesting thought. Very interesting thought. Mind you see, you and I'd be no good in a soap, would we?
No. Would we? Come on, what are you playing at? Just get on with your life.
I could be Ian with the pub. And Ange could be the tarot reader with the prosperous cafe next door.
Oh, come on, Ian. We both know we'd end up setting up wellbeing shows and crystal shops. And,
yes, we would, wouldn't we?
And then the incense flying over extenders. Mug of sage and incense.
Yeah.
And candles burning everywhere.
Yeah. and crazy people talking about people living behind the moon, etc. Ron Yorant would make a good soap, you know.
That would make an amazing soap.
It would, actually, yeah. I mean, some of the people that you and I have met over the years would make incredible characters. Old Doc Cotton would pale into insignificance, wouldn't she?
Oh, God, yeah. God, yeah. Some of the characters we've met over the years, it'd be the strangest bunch of oddballs and crazies that you'd ever know.
Craziest Lulu. Craziest Lulu I ever met was the guy. He's in his final sleep now, and you can't libel the dead. But it was a time when Liz and I were thinking about buying a narrowboat and going to live on a narrowboat. You know, you have these romantic notions, don't you?
Yeah.
Which actually died after the third one we looked at because we both realised there's no way that I could live on a narrowboat.
I'm
just
small.
Just exactly too small. And but he'd got it into his head that was it, and he kept coming around the corner at the market with books about how to live on a narrowboat and canal life and some videos by about two celebrities, I can't remember who they were, who traveled on narrowboats. And I kept saying to him, I don't need any more books on it, and they started crying. And I didn't know what to do, but he was a real Lulu. And then I said, look, you know, if you don't mind, I'll give these books away to somebody who I know that's interested in narrowboats. And we did know somebody who was interested, so we gave them away to somebody who was interested in narrowboats. But, you know, the strangest people. And there was one day a guy came, bought a crystal ball, really expensive, quartz crystal, and I think it was about 70 or 80 pounds, and this was 10 years ago. And about 4 weeks later he came back and he said, not very good, I don't like this, or can I have a part exchange? And this crystal book, this sphere, was absolutely chipped and you'd never see anything like it. What the hell have you done to this? I don't want this back. He said, I've been using it for bowling in the kitchen.
What do you don't like it?
Oh, dear me.
Oh.
Yeah, and then we had somebody who used to buy 30 boxes of incense a week.
Yeah,
a week, yeah, because she got to get rid of the spirits that were around her, because her husband had told her that he had dug up her mother's ashes, and he'd been feeding them to her, and she thought she'd eaten her mother's ashes. So she was burning all these incense sticks to get rid of the spirit. I mean, how far do you want to go with these stories?
No.
And you know, you've been a bit more of a situation where you can't talk about some of the strange things that you meet. But, I mean, those people, all of them are now in their final sleep. And I sometimes think to myself, you know, I sat down once and I wrote a list of all the people who've been customers who have now entered their final sleep. And it was a massive list. It's amazing how many people pass over, isn't it, in a period of 15 years or so, if you have a shot.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back to this thought about tabula rasa, the blank sheet. So if you've got little, then is it fair to say you've got the potential to gain everything, and possibly more potential than at any other time?
Well, yeah, of course you can gain everything. Everything's there to gain, isn't it? Everything's there to gain. And it's just a case of how much time and effort you want to put into gaining that. And it doesn't always come down to finances sometimes. You know, if you want to gain, say, for example, you're in a relationship at the moment that you're not getting on with, you know, you're not getting on with a partner, there's things happening, you know they're not the right person for you, you want to get out of that relationship. When this is all over, you've got the perfect opportunity to get out of that relationship. But I bet a lot of people will still stay in that relationship because they've been in it for a long time.
But if they do, it's more damaging, isn't it? Because if they've gone through a situation where they've lived with somebody for quite some time, then they have this enforced enclosure, this enforced imprisonment, and then they realise that the person they've lived with for years isn't the same person that they thought, has changed. They see different things that they don't normally see in their traits. If they don't do something about it, they are then in a worse position than they were before the imprisonment.
Yeah, exactly. They are. They are in a worse position because they know they're not in the right place. They know they're not with the right person. And they're just going to make themselves more and more miserable to the point where they end up locking away their emotions. And then they start locking their emotions away from everybody else.
Very interesting.
And they become very depressed and very down and very isolated in a way.
So let's just shift it just a little bit. Let's keep coming back to this same thing. So one day you go out to work all weekend reading, and all of a sudden you realise you haven't brought your working bag with you. So you haven't got your cards, you haven't got your crystals, you haven't got anything. Would you be able just to take 10 or 15 cards, postcards, blank postcards, cut them in half and make your own cards up to work with?
Me personally, because I'm an intuitive tarot reader, yes. I can read, because you know the origins of tarot cards. They were originally from China. It was a pack of normal playing cards that people used to tell stories with, and that's where the origin of tarot cards came from. With me, it's more about intuition. So I don't always need the cards to be able to give a reading, but the cards kind of put things in perspective and they slow the reading down to the point where I'm not just gibbering for half an hour, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm actually putting things in place and we're able to have more of a discussion about it. Whereas when I use a crystal ball, it comes at you thick and fast and you have to just keep talking and talking and talking and trying to pull it in order that way. Mm-hmm. So for me, bearing in mind I've always got a spare set of tarot cards in my car, Ian, so there's always a pack of tarot cards on me no matter where I go.
Fail safe.
Just in case that ever happens, because, you know, menopausal brain does make you forget. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't have Claude, I think I would forget my brain sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think, yeah, I could. I don't really need the cards to give a reading, is what I'm trying to say.
Good.
The cards put things in perspective for
excellent,
me.
Excellent, excellent. So they're like, if you like, they're like gateways or doorways into tools. The soul and thought. Okay.
They're a tool. They're a tool to put it all into order.
So let's put you on the spot then. I shall get out my Rider-Waite deck, which is always in front of me.
Here we go again.
Yes.
On the spot, Ian.
On the spot. Well, how many cards do you want me to draw? One, two, or three?
Oh, let's go for three.
Oh, three cards. Now, are we going to read for a unknown friend? Let's see if an unknown friend is going to listen to the reading. And this is just for an unknown friend. And let's see if we get somebody who comes back and says, oh, that was very relevant to me. So, one, two. Interesting. So we've got the Eight of Swords, which is the blindfolded lady sitting, standing, but the blindfolded bound lady sitting on a marshland surrounded by swords. Two of Cups, the two lovely people looking at each other, and the Magician. So 8, 2, and 1, Eight of Swords, Two of Cups, and the Magician.
Right. So the first card, yeah, whoever this is in a bit of a place at the moment where they're having to reassess a lot, not just their life that's coming, but their life that's gone. They kind of seem to be looking back a lot at the moment, and they seem to be trying to work out where their life's gone wrong, rather than looking at the positives. And if they actually took stock and actually looked at the positives of what they've got right this second, they'd actually realise that their life's not that bad. But I think they're feeling quite down at the moment. They feel like there's a bit of a dark shadow hanging over them, and that's not quite the case. And they need to kind of shake themselves out of it a bit, because they need to kind of say, you know, look at what I have got and be grateful for what they have got at the moment.
Excellent. And the Two of Cups, how's that relevant to those, to that situation?
So that one's kind of saying that to be able to get into a place where they can start looking at what they've got, they need to attack how they're feeling about what they've had, what they've been through. They've never really faced up to their stuff in the past.
Good.
So they need to face up to it, and they need to find out what their lessons were before they can let go of it. So to be able to fully look forward, they've got to face up to what their lessons were and work out how they're going to use those lessons going forward.
Great. And this Magician.
So the third card, that's about them putting their things in place, to be honest. It's about putting their stands in the ground as such, and start marking out their path and marking out where they want to go and what they want to do with it. It's about pushing themselves forward and building themselves up and becoming themselves again, because they've lost who they are. So they need to become themselves again to be able to go forward fully.
So from my notes, it's a case of, if one feels bound by the situations, then look deeply into the inner self and take control of one's life and use what they've got to their own advantage.
Yeah, it is. Good. It is, definitely.
Good. So that will be working for somebody. I have no doubt about it. Mm. None whatsoever.
I do, just before we move on, Ian, I do have a male spirit here with me today, and he's been with me all morning, and I had no idea why he was here with me all morning, but he's just said, and it's a really simple sentence, and he's just said, look deep within yourself to be able to push yourself forward. And that was the real simple sentence he's just said, and I have no idea who he is. He's a very fine chap. He's got a really nice sort of suit on, and he looks proper dapper, would be the word I'd use. His hair's proper slick and proper slicked back, and probably with hair wax more than actual gel or anything.
Interesting.
Feels like hair wax, like proper hair wax.
So I'm certain that that message will be for somebody listening to this. I just know it will.
Yeah.
And in a way, those cards are almost relevant to that, aren't they? Deep within themselves. Do you sense that this person, what era do you think this spirit was manifest? Oh.
He feels like he's from the 40s or the 50s, to be honest, because of the way he's dressed and the way that his hair slicks back with wax rather than hairspray or gel. He's very clean shaven as well. He seems to be very clean shaven, and he's got very broad shoulders. And it wouldn't have surprised me if he was actually in one of the wars, because he feels like he's been sort of regimented in a way. because he's standing very straight with his shoulders back and very proudly.
And do you sense his messages for a male or a female, Ange?
For me, this feels like a female.
Good.
This feels like a female to me.
Excellent. I suppose, would you take a chance on, or would you say that the cards may be relevant for the same person?
Quite possibly, yeah. I think they probably are because of the sentence that he used. He's gone now, by the way. He's disappeared again. But he's been with me all morning and then all of a sudden he's just disappeared. But he's come to say what he needed to say and he said it and now he's gone. But he's... But because of the sentence he used, I think they are very relevant to what the cards were saying.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Do you think that spirits actually use all sorts of different conduits to get the message over?
Yes, of course they do. I mean, sometimes they show me visions, sometimes they show me clothes or pictures or even animals. I sometimes get animals coming through trying to give me messages, which is a bit crazy sometimes. But yeah, they do use very different conduits sometimes.
What was the most profound message you ever received?
That's a big one. The funniest message that I ever got through, which was really good because sometimes I get music as well. But this particular one, and I didn't actually know the song until I played it, and then I was like, oh yeah, I do kind of remember that song, because I was too young when the song came out. And I was sitting here with a lady and I was chatting away and I said, oh, and this spirit here is for you, and I'm not sure who he is, but what he's playing me a song. And I started singing the song, and I can't remember how it goes even now, Ian, so I can't even sing it for you, but it was Ernie is the Fastest Milkman in the West.
Yes, I know it. Benny Hill. Ernie, yeah. And he was the fastest milkman in the West.
That's the one. And I sat there and I started singing it to her from what this spirit was saying. And the woman opposite just me just went, my husband was a milkman and he always used to sing that song to me but replace his name with it. And I was like, well, that's just funny. Because he's singing this song to me that I couldn't really remember. I couldn't really remember the song because it came out in the 80s, didn't it? Early 80s.
Yeah, I think and so. I was easily only born
in 79. Yeah. So it was like, well, yeah. It really did kind of throw me a bit when I started singing it to her because I was like, I'm not sure if I've even got the right tune here. And then she just sort of said, oh, that's my husband. He was a milkman and he used to sing that song to me. And then as I started saying things to her, he started singing other songs and I started giving, and he was doing most of his talking through songs. And she was like, he was always dancing. He was always up dancing and singing. And, you know, she said you couldn't get him off the dance floor at a party. And I was like, all right, okay, that's why he's singing all these songs to you then.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he was communicating through songs and it was a great way to get that spirit through. I loved it.
I can remember I was talking to my brother, and my brother, he's a bit borderline, I think, with spiritual stuff. I think he's got something, but he doesn't. But he said that he was in, I think he's in Whitby or somewhere like that, and he thought, I'll just have a reading with this reader or whatever it was. And she said, you know, you've got to be so careful because there's a very dark entity very near you. And if you knew my brother, it's just not possible. So he looked at her dead square in the face and said, not half as bad as the one that you've got standing behind you. And she said, what? Where? And he completely flummoxed her. And I thought, justice. But do you think that message that when my brother said that, do you think it might have meant more? Do you think there might have been more to it?
What, of her saying it's...
No, when he said to her, not a half as bad as the one that's standing behind you, because he said her reaction was unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that's probably her instant, oh my God, have I gone too far telling other people that it's got it, that I've drawn it to myself.
Yeah, you see, that's interesting, isn't it? Because there's a lot of readers who if they're not careful, they become quite monotonous, don't they? Over the years, I've come across a couple of three of them. And I think that's... when you've got to really start to draw the line, I think, if you're down that route. And I think, I mean, what to you, what do you think makes a good medium psychic reader? What do you think are the best ingredients? What are the main ingredients?
The first one is honesty.
Mm.
You've got to be honest with the people you're reading for. If you're not seeing something, don't try and make it up. If you're not getting a spirit through, don't tell them there's a spirit there and try to make up the spirit, because it will get picked apart and the people opposite will just go, no, that doesn't sound right, you know? So I think honesty is the number one thing for any reader or medium to have. Number one.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, it's interesting as well, because we talk about tarot, because, you know, I used to teach tarot and I've been involved with it for so many years. I adore it as a masterpiece of storytelling, as contacts, conduits, mind thing, you name it, does anything for you. And I can remember I was within a situation, and somebody within that situation said, I keep shuffling the cards and I keep laying the cards out and I get nothing but pentacles, nothing but coins. And there was a really wise, very, very, very good reader in the group. And she turned around and said, do you not intuitively know what that means? And he said, I can't put my finger on it. She said, you'll never want for anything.
Mm.
And interestingly, this guy, who I've known for quite some time, has never wanted for anything. Do you think that people, sometimes it's like staring them in the face and they can't see it when they're working the cards themselves?
I think for me, I never read for myself. And the reason why I never read for myself is because I don't know if I'm fully turning my brain off or not, and I'm always questioning it. So I always go to other tarot readers to have a reading.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. But don't you find sometimes when you sit in front of another reader for a reading, don't you think you'll sometimes put them on edge?
I do, and I know I do. And I've been to readers that have known me, and I've sat down in front of them, and I'm a bit of a one when I sit in front of other tarot readers, especially if they know me, because the first thing I say is, I don't want to know anything about my business.
Do you?
Yeah, because that's mostly what people know me for, especially other tarot readers. They know I'm a tarot reader.
Yes,
they know
of course. I'm
Swayed. So I want to know about my personal life. I don't want to know about my business. I'm not, you know, my business is going to do what my business does, and I'm going to continue to do my business regardless of what I get told in a tarot reading. If I want advice about my business, I'll go to the people that I want advice from.
Mm. Yeah, I see that.
So I always put tarot readers on the spot a little bit, and they instantly, unless they really, really don't know me. And so if I go down to Portsmouth, I might have a tarot reading when I'm down in Portsmouth with a tarot reader that really doesn't know who I am. And I won't ever give my full name, because I don't think you should need somebody's full name.
That's interesting. I've had loads of readings with loads of different readers and whatever, and some have seriously impressed me, and some I've had to walk away and let's say you always pay the piper, don't you? End of story.
Yeah.
And some have been simply abysmal, frankly, simply abysmal. And I think that I think very often the reason is that sometimes they know who I am, and they think that they, because of what they might read or might may not read on social media, or, you know, because of a lot of people know me, I think they sometimes assume too much.
Mm.
I can remember once as well, the funniest thing ever happened to me. I was at a show and there was a reader, and I walked by this reader and she said, I've got to tell you something. I said, what's that? She said, nobody can be as happy as you. It's just not possible for anybody to be as happy as you. You know, there's something lays below you that's dark. And I looked at this reader and it's dead square in the face and said, get yourself another job. She never spoke to me again. Do you know that?
Ooh. I'm always intrigued when you tell me these stories, who these people are, Ian. But I know you'll never tell me unless I've got a drink inside of you.
Yes. That'll cost you more than six Guinnesses. That's an eight Guinness answer, that is.
Oh, bless you.
Oh, dear. Bless you. I've had some fantastic times. I can remember there was one guy who used to sit there reading his newspaper. He used to just read his newspaper, and then just now and again he put his head over the newspaper and said, "I've got a message for you." And then people would just sit in front of him. And there was another guy who, his whole reason for reading was to meet women.
Oh, God.
I've got to say, he was quite successful. Can you remember Paul Silver Fox?
No.
Oh, he was a great guy. He was. We were at a show in Newcastle on Tyne many years ago, and it was in this building, and the power went off. Literally, the fuse box blew up. So on the Sunday, there was going to be no power. And the organiser came around and said, "Oh, I don't know what to do. And said, "Well, run it. You know, open the doors. It's not dark in here." Well, having no power is not going to work. And Paul Silverfox had got an aura camera, and he came up to me and he said, "Well, I don't know what to do." I said, "What do you mean you don't know what to do?" He said, I've no idea. He said, I can't say I'm going to do my, I can't use my aura camera or anything like that. I said, "You lived in California for 7 years as an artist and you were very successful. You're a brilliant artist. Draw the auras." And he said, "Oh, I will." So he went and got himself a box of crayons and a cheap Ballaston Bond piece of paper. Never stopped.
Great, isn't it?
And you know, the strangest thing was, the next time I saw him, he'd gone back to using the camera.
People bizarre. Come reliant, don't they? They come reliant on their tools.
Yeah, yeah. Funny thing. And have you a favourite across the world? Anyway, have you somebody that you really admire as a reader or a psychic or a medium? Is there anybody you really admire?
There's one particular person that has helped me a hell of a lot with my connection with a lot of my ability. To be fair,
mm-hmm.
You know, in my development and stuff, not just through psychic and medium and tarot, but also through the crystals and the kinesiology and, you know, all those sort of things. And that's Sally Wavin.
Oh, yes, yes. Liz knows her quite well.
She's my Yoda. She's my little Yoda. And anybody that knows Sally knows that she looks a little bit like Yoda as well. she knows I call her Yoda. And there's been a lot of people now calling her Yoda. Because she's taught a hell of a lot of people.
Mm.
She's helped a lot of people get on their path.
Yeah,
You know, and for that, you've got to respect the woman.
Ange, what's your feeling about people teaching spiritual ideas and thoughts? There's a lot of people doing so at this moment.
I think there's a lot of people out there that teach that are great teachers, but don't always put themselves out there as much publicly. You know, but then I think there's some people out there that are awful teachers that put themselves out there so much and push themselves so much that they, you know, they're a bit of a...
Emperor's New Clothes?
The Showman, yes. The Emperor's New Clothes. I loved that book when I was younger.
Yes.
I loved that book when I was younger.
Could you visualise? Yeah. Could you visualise the poor chap naked?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had... there was this folder when I was younger and I can't remember what... But there was loads of stories in it, and The Emperor's New Clothes was one of them that I used to read a lot when I was younger. I used to love that story. It was one of my favourites. But I had a folder of loads of sort of magazine books in there, and The Emperor's New Clothes was one of the stories in there.
Rupert Bear and Tintin, they were my two. When I was little, Rupert Bear, but got up to about, once I got past about seven or eight, then it was Tintin, and I was absolutely obsessed. Still am. Love Tintin. Absolutely fantastic. Really like him because he had a lot of mystery around him, and of course old Professor Calculus, he liked the old pendulum, didn't he?
Yeah he did.
Great.
I mean, there was loads of books. I was trying to think of them the other day, but there was The Enchanted Garden. I mean, if we go back to child, there's things like The Hungry Caterpillar and The Griffin. You know, there was some real kiddies books at those age, weren't there? You know,
Lion, Witch and Wardrobe.
Oh, I did like The Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe. I also liked reading the Wizard of Oz books as well when I was younger.
Did you? Interesting.
Was it just two? I'm sure there was three or four of the Wizard of Oz books, but I can't quite remember now. It's so long ago. But there was definitely two. But I always preferred the second one to the first one.
Very interesting. I'll tell you what I always found interesting. I mean, you know how J.K. Rowling is very protective about her brand Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
She pounces on people, doesn't they, if they come anywhere near it. But actually, have you ever read Billy Bunter?
No.
Well, I'm absolutely convinced that the school that Billy Bunter was in was Hogwarts.
Ah.
And I was talking to somebody some time ago, and he was absolutely convinced that there was a lot of tarot symbolism in Harry Potter books.
There was quite a lot of tarot symbolism. I've been rereading the Harry Potter books since we've been off, and I've had a little bit more time. It's been quite fun.
Yeah, and I think even though she pounces on them, I think she's a bit greedy, because the truth to me is that the stories are actually a medley of other stories, aren't they?
Yeah, quite possibly, yeah. Because there's other stuff in there. I mean, we had The Worst Witch when we were younger as well. Do you remember The Worst Witch?
No, I don't.
That was always a good programme. And then we had things like Pippa Longstocking. And she was a bit magical, wasn't she?
Yes, there's nothing unusually in fictional witches and magicians. I mean, Buffy, she was a witch, wasn't she? And Elizabeth Montgomery in Bewitched, she was a child witch, really, because her mother was about. I know she was grown up, but that's it. I could never ever watch Dallas without thinking about Bewitched, because Larry Hagman, he was the Air Force officer in that program.
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
Going back before my time, I always remember watching it in the 80s as a child and loving it, but it was out way before my time.
I don't know what it was about. I don't know what it was about Elizabeth Montgomery, but she was mystical to look at, almost, wasn't she? She'd got that refinement to her.
She'd got the goddess within her.
She had. Now, an hour's gone by, as easy as we can say, whoosh,
wow.
Have another spell. We've covered tons and tons of ground. And I'm beginning to realise from a few emails that I'm beginning to receive about our podcast, people like listening to conversations. Very interesting, isn't it? Very, very interesting indeed. And I think that our podcasts have had incredible numbers listening to them, got quite a following. I think we should call it the Ange and Ian Show.
The Ange and Ian Show.
Good.
The Angian.
Angian, yes, Angian Show. Angian Show. We will talk about everything that we possibly can in an hour. As you've already seen, we've had lots and lots of people love the banquets. They love both of your banquets, and they edited beautifully.
Was it Claire that did a banquet yesterday, or was it Heather? I can't quite remember. It was one of them two.
Heather wrote an article, and Claire. Oh, that's a funny noise. And Claire did the banquet. We've got some quite nice blankets. And I've got a banquet coming up with Kirsty, and I've got a banquet coming up with Bridget Ricks, which is very interesting.
I'm interested to hear both of those ones.
Have you read many? I'm going off piece here, but have you read many of Bridget's books?
No, I've not read any of Bridget's books, to be honest. Mm. But every time I talk to her, we always have a good little conversation, usually in the toilet at a show.
Yeah, because you can never get a word in edgewise, because she's just inundated with people from the beginning to end, isn't she, at shows? Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah, she's
very well loved, which is great.
Yeah, she makes...
And she's a lovely, lovely lady. She's such a lovely lady.
She is.
And, but we usually end up having a little conversation in the toilet over a show weekend, and we're usually there washing our hands together and having a little chat. And always sets us up for the day.
Her father was a officer in the Imperial Russian Navy, and when the And when the revolution came, he had to go. He left the navy. Obviously, he left the navy. He went to live in Tunisia, and then he went to Algeria. And Brigitte was born in Algeria. Very interesting lady. She was a teacher. Oh. Yes, very interesting.
I always thought Brigitte was French.
Yes, the Algerian French. You see, that's where it comes from. Yeah. She lived. Her mum was French.
Right, that makes more sense then.
So she's
easy people, and don't let anything get you down at the moment. Just keep going forward.
And don't forget, there's always solace at the bottom of a bottle.
If all else fails.
Yes, if all else fails, Ange and Ian say, have a drink and have a nice plateful of food, followed by a nice sweet, and life will be good.
Yeah, the next day you'll feel a lot better once you wake up.
You absolutely will. Ange, nice to speak to you. See you next week.
Great to speak to you, Ian. Thank you.
Bye.